So we got off to a little bit of a late start there because of some technical difficulties on my end, certainly. This is your Captain Joe. I am up in the captain's chair figuratively because I am talking to you from Burlington, Vermont. And so I've moved the captain's chair from the magical Isle of Vashon to Burlington, Vermont, actually to Essex Junction, Vermont, which is where my sister and my brother-in-law live and where we are all foregathered for a great Thanksgiving celebration. So greetings to Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore even today on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, to all of Captain Joe's listeners, including some new listeners in Maryland, and other new listeners in other parts of the world. It is always a special privilege for me to be able to deliver greetings for events like Thanksgiving and Christmas, because I am indeed the most fortunate of men. And we're going to talk a little bit about Thanksgivings that I have been a part of in other parts of the world, and also to express my thanks for all of Captain Joe's people all over the world who grace me every single day. On the binnacle list today, we have, I think, only good news in that, first of all, there have been no crossings of the bar that have been reported to your captain. And secondly, I checked with Captain O'Brien, who is engineering for me today, and he reports that he is continuing to improve. And I had also reported on here my own entry onto the binnacle list when I made a two-point landing on a gravel car park. The nose gear was the side of my face, and the starboard undercart, which was my starboard knee, is what took up the shock. I am going to take myself off the binnacle list next week. There's still a little bit of swelling in the face and a little bit of swelling on that starboard knee, but I've been using triple antibiotic ointment and there's no infection, so it's all working the way that it's supposed to. And so for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list for things much more serious, Truman's is certainly very serious. I've been worried about that ever since the first time that he showed some of these symptoms. But for people who are on the binnacle list for things that are much more serious than what we have, that I've reported about myself, that please follow the instructions of your medical practitioner so that you leave the binnacle list in the fashion which is approved by the corpsman, by the chief corpsman, and also by your captain up in the captain's chair. To get to Burlington, Vermont, from Seattle is not necessarily an easy task. And I flew on United from SeaTac to Chicago, or ORD, airline code ORD, and then from ORD to Burlington, Vermont, also on United. I have to report, and I have also told all of Captain Joe's people that in my what is arguably the well into the second half of my life, that I have decided that from now on, with all of my travels, that I'm going to fly in the forward end of the aircraft and not the aft end any longer. So one would think that flying in the forward end, that things like food would be of the quality and quantity not only sufficient unto the needs thereof, but also would be commensurate with the premium fare that one pays to fly in the front end of any aircraft. Well, this is not to be. The food in the forward end of both, in the flight from SeaTac to ORD, was absolutely awful. And the food from ORD someone, I have a friend who is a former travel agent, a very highly skilled, very experienced travel agent. And in order to sample the wares of the products that she was selling, she would frequently fly. And one of the flights that, some of the flights that she took, one of them was in United in the days when food would be brought on a little trolley and things like Chateaubriand steak would be cut up at your place. Well, don't expect that today, and what you get is really pretty, pretty bad. Furthermore, United has a very high-level executive whose job it is to make sure that when you land in one place and you have to, in a particular terminal, and you have to make a connection someplace else in that terminal, that the distance which you have to go from where you land to where you make your connection is made as far as possible. So I made this connection in ORD, and not only did I have to move from one terminal to the other, that's the one where you go underground in that long tunnel and then climb back up to the heights of the other terminal, the B or Bravo terminal, but they had skillfully planned it so that you are as far downstream on one to get as far upstream on the other. I can report that that executive is certainly earning every dollar that he makes because he managed to, I thought we were going into the next county to get that flight. Finally, the second aircraft was an Airbus 319. The first one was a Boeing 737, a MAX 9. I know the crewman will correct me on this, but it was a fairly new machine and was constructed with the quality that we have come to expect from Boeing. And I know that they've had some quality control issues with some of their aircraft, but this really was the first flight was really a lovely new Boeing machine in the 737 series, 900, 737-900. But the 319, the Airbus 319, I always am concerned with Airbus aircraft that as they are moving along the taxiways, that they are dropping little bits and pieces of the machine. It always sounds like the pieces are falling off. You can hear scraping and grinding down underneath you. And so we were bouncing along this Airbus 319. To the end of the runway to take off. And we get down to the end of the runway, and the aircraft commander was spooled this thing up, and it started to whine, and it whined, and it whined higher and higher and higher, and off we went. And we trundled down the runway, and I am absolutely certain that vital components of that aircraft were falling off and onto the runway as we climbed out. And as we climbed out, you could hear the engines, the 10 mice that are working away on port and starboard engines, just beavering away and really making a lot of racket. It wasn't until we got up to cruising altitude that the aircraft commander finally backed off on those engines and we could hear each other. I don't know whether this is true of all Airbus aircraft. I really would like to fly and plan to fly in an A380, one of those enormous whales in the sky. But that 319, I like a purple cow. I hope to never see one. And yet I'm sure that somewhere in my travels, I will yet once again have to fly in an Airbus 319. A little bit about leadership. This is not a party matter. This is a matter of good leadership, and that is that the current Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, representing one of the San Francisco districts, has proclaimed that when the next Congress begins, that she will no longer be the leader of the Democratic Party. My experience is, and it is of some considerable amount, with leadership in its various colors and flavors, is that when a leader, a commander, a captain, is finished and is time and moves on to a new assignment, that he or she should never return. And he or she should never render any advice as to how his successor is going to command. And yet, Nancy is a towering figuratively, she's not very tall, but a towering figure in terms of political leadership. We could argue, we could discuss, and probably come to no partisan conclusion as to whether she was a good speaker. She certainly is no Sam Rayburn. She's certainly no Henry Clay. But in any case, we could have that argument and come to no conclusion. The point that I make here is that if she is giving up her leadership of the party, she is still there. She is still going to be the ghost of Christmas past. And I cannot imagine anybody who assumes the leadership of the Democratic Party not always looking over his or her port and starboard shoulders to see how close aboard Nancy is coming up his stern to. And so my advice, had I been asked, and I have not, my advice is, Nancy, either retain the leadership of the party, even though you'll no longer be the speaker, or no longer represent that district in San Francisco and go into honored and honorary retirement. And that is what I have to say about that. The possibility of a rail strike is over us once again. I've put this out as not only a public service announcement, but also my disgust with everybody concerned with all of this, that they have not been able to come to a resolution which will preserve the supply chain, and especially because we're coming up onto the festive holiday season. So here's the word from the captain's chair. This is my pontification on this particular subject. Knock off the cheap stuff and get on with the work of coming up with a contract that the rail unions can sign on to and that is acceptable to the people who will be paying the bills. For Thanksgiving, I have been deployed many, many times for Thanksgiving, and it was always the intention of my command, it was always my intention that the crew would have a Thanksgiving dinner as close as we could possibly make it. And we were very successful, even on the gun line in Vietnam. When we were coming up on the Thanksgiving season, when the oiler would come alongside to refuel us, the ammunition ship would come alongside to bring us replenishment of the magazines, and when the chaplain would come over, and I've told the story of the disdain of my commanding officer about having a chaplain in the ship, and all of the ships from which we replenished so that we could continue to operate on the gun line, also brought over hundreds of Thanksgiving provisions so that we were able to have a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner, as close as it could be, as if we were back in our home port of Norfolk. However, when Mary R. and I had our first Thanksgiving in Cambridge, we were not our establishment was not set up in such a way that we could have our own Thanksgiving dinner, and I had by then not yet figured out how to use the military facilities that I was entitled to use at the combined bases, RAF and USAF bases at Lake and Heath and Mildenhall. So we decided to have Thanksgiving dinner with the lovely people of the Cambridge American Society. And bless their hearts, they really did the best that they could. But they never really grasped the concept of what we call either dressing or stuffing, depending on which part of the country you come from. The part of the country from which I come, dressing always includes oysters, and I always make it when I make dressing or stuffing for any particular event. Brits have a terrible product called Paxo. It's spelled P-A-X-O, Paxo. Do not ever buy it unless you really want to just see what it's like. You can find it in some markets here in the States, especially specialty markets. Paxo, pass it by quickly unless you really feel that you want to try it just to see what the captain is talking about. It makes a truly disgusting product, and it looks like, I'm not sure how best to describe it. There's some words that in that list that I'm not allowed to use on the broadcast. Anyway, it's really, and it tastes pretty much what it looks like. So, but they had pans of Paxo alongside the turkey. The Brits do not raise turkeys the same way that we do. And the vegetables, all the vegetables, they did the best that they could. But we felt that we could do better. And so the following year, by this time, I had figured out how to use the commissary at Mildenhall. And I went up to Mildenhall and I bought several very large American-style turkeys and all of the things to go with it. And we had we invited a number of our Cambridge friends, because by this time we had accumulated a large group of wonderful, wonderful people. And I tried to set the table. We extended the table from the dining room all the way into the living room, and I think we had about 20, 22 people there. And I tried to figure out the precedence, because one of our guests was Sir Vivian Fuchs, Sir Vivian and Lady Eleanor Fuchs. Sir Vivian became one of my closest friends in Cambridge, and he, of course, is the person, the explorer, who successfully accomplished the mission that Sir Ernest Shackleton tried to do when Endurance sank under him in the Weddell Sea. He accomplished the first transit of the Antarctic continent in 1957. And Sir Vivian came, and I calculated that he was probably, in terms of British precedence and rank, that he was probably the senior man. But I exhausted my knowledge of all of this when I got to some of the more senior academics. And then I said, well, the hell with it. I am just going to mix everybody up. And that's what I did. And we just had a glorious time. And for many of these people, this was their first experience with a traditional American Thanksgiving dinner. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful time. So I mentioned this because my college at Cambridge is, and one must belong to the university, one must be a member of one of the colleges. My college is Darwin in Silver Street, and one must belong to a department, and my department is the Scott Polar Research Institute. So I got today in my traffic, even here in Burlington, Vermont, a Thanksgiving greetings from Darwin College. And it reminded me of that first Thanksgiving and then the second Thanksgiving that we had in Cambridge when we were living there. So thanks to Darwin. If I were to go, if they have a Thanksgiving dinner in the dining hall in at Darwin, where we would all be wearing gowns and would be seated below the high table, the traditional high table. Darwin is although it's one of the newer colleges, it's a very traditional one. And so there is a high table, and I do not rank high enough to sit at the high table unless I were there as a guest. I am not a fellow of that college, so I would be sitting at one of the lower tables wearing my gown, and with whoever had as my guest, we would be drinking what the Brits call plunk. Plunk is wine of not the highest quality, which some often appears in Cambridge colleges. So many thanks to Darwin for the Thanksgiving greetings, and happily it did not come with a request for some financial sustenance. So when the next request from Darwin comes for that, I will help them out a little bit. a very interesting article about the possibility of restoration of bases in the Philippines. Those of us who are Westpac people, and my Coast Guard channel family has many people who are Westpac people. Not all of them are Vietnam veterans, but people who have sailed all over the Pacific and have sailed in and out of the Philippines for many, many years. During the Vietnam War, the home port for all of the ships that belonged to the 7th Fleet was Subic Bay. And the city that is services Subic Bay is the city of Olongapo. All of us know Olongapo very, very well. When the Philippines decided to sever their ties with the United States Navy, and in particular with the 7th Fleet, they transferred the base at Subic to some civilian usage. And whether it can be brought back into military usage remains to be seen. Will Clark Air Force Base be restored? I don't know the answer to any of those questions, but I find it very interesting that the president of the Philippines now is Ferdinand Marcos Jr., who is the son of the previous dictator of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos. And so it is going to be really interesting to all of us Westpac hands to see how all of this develops and how this opens out. It remains, though, for me to say that I have had many, many Filipino shipmates, and they are wonderful people with whom to go to sea. So a quick announcement. I mentioned this last week. I do so again. The open house out at Point Robinson Lighthouse is on Sunday, the 4th of December, from noon until 4 o'clock. I will be out at the lighthouse myself. We still will not be able to go to the top of the tower, but I present a fascinating tour and discussion, and I really look forward to having everybody come and meet with the Lighthouse Santa and to join us for the wonderful buffet and music that we're going to have. It is the beginning of the holiday season for many, many island people. I'm coming up on the end of my time, as always, far too quickly. This is, as always, your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Next week, I will be broadcasting from someplace else on the East Coast because I do not go back to the Magical Isle until Wednesday. And I am very grateful to Captain O'Brien, to my friend Truman for engineering for me today. And so a quick acknowledgement that because I am the most fortunate of men, it is because of all of you who listen to me, give me a little bit of your time and your love and your respect every week for the half hour that we spend together. I hope that I give back to you just as much in return, because I feel very strongly that the things that we do together are of such importance. Those things that we reach out and we touch each other, we touch other people, we touch people that we have never known. I had a person on the flight with me last night from Chicago to Burlington, my seatmate on that flight. And she was a young lady who felt compelled to open up about a lot of things that were happening in her life. And so we had a very interesting discussion about all of those things. You never know how those opportunities are going to reach out. And so it is, as always, for me to say to you that from the captain's chair, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your Captain Joe, always on station and watching properly, wishing you the happiest and safest of all Thanksgiving seasons this year in the year of our Lord 2022.